Welcome. So, tonight we take up Sri Aurobindo's powerful book, The Mother, which one of his great disciples, Sri T.V. Kapali Shastriya, described as Matri Upanishad, the Upanishad of the Mother. It has such power, such evocative significance, that when you read the lines that he's written here, among the most beautiful and powerful that he ever composed in prose, they have an effect. They have the capacity to install in someone with the right adhara, with the right equipment, the reality that they represent. So many people, having read this book, have found their way into the practice of the integral yoga with nothing else to guide them. This small book, hardly 6 chapters in length, not even 30 pages. What we intend to do in working in this book is to go through it a bit at a time and to bring in Sri Aurobindo's powerful insights from the synthesis of yoga, from letters on yoga, occasionally even from his record of yoga, as they apply, as they're pertinent to what we're reading. More, we hope to bring some elucidation from the still living goddess tradition, the Mahadevi tradition in India, something that dates back to at least the 6th century in the Devi Mahatmya. All of this will help us to understand more significantly what this book offers to us. So we'll go a little at a time. We're not going to be in a hurry. We're not going to read a chapter a week, as we have done often in the past, over the years. But I am going to read the entire first chapter tonight before we close. But before we get to that, let me set a context and also say that next week we'll actually offer commentary on the first chapter. I don't intend to do that tonight. We'll do that next time. Sri Aurobindo published the book The Mother in 1928. But everything was written in 1927. We'll talk about it chapter by chapter. This first chapter was written for the occasion of the mother's birthday, 21 February 1927. You'll recall that only a few months earlier, one of the capital events, not simply in the history of Pondicherry, but in the history of the world, had occurred on the 24th of November with the descent of the overmind, of the consciousness of Krishna, into the physical cells of Sri Aurobindo's body. At the time, there were already a couple of dozen people living around Sri Aurobindo. And this person that they were coming increasingly to call the mother. Some already referred to her as that. Some were a bit reluctant. She had returned from a several-year sojourn in Japan as Mira Rishar. You know her history. We won't repeat it all here tonight. But her arrival in Pondicherry in 1920 meant for Sri Aurobindo that the time to take his metaphysic and make it a concrete reality had come. He found in her a collaborator to unusual depth. He said of her that she was the only being he had ever met who had the capacity to surrender all the way to the cells of the body. He didn't find that he himself had that capacity, but he recognized it in her. For the several years between 1920 and 1926, she stayed largely behind the scenes. And the people who were there as the corpus of what would later become the ashram would have access to him, sometimes through the day, but often in the evening. They would have an access point at which they could ask him questions, sit with him quietly, meditate with him, or at least meditate in his presence. She stayed behind the scenes. Slowly, that began to change over the years. Mother began to come more to the fore. Her actual arrival in Pondicherry meant a felicitation to the lives of those who were already living there, because when she moved into the household with Sri Aurobindo on the 24th of November in 1920, she brought with her a touch of beauty, a touch of elegance, and put into each room of the household some element of harmony. Staying quietly behind the scenes, referred to by Sri Aurobindo from time to time, sending people to her, but she stayed behind and worked, working on herself, working on her collaboration with the World Mother, working with Sri Aurobindo and hastening the descent of the supramental consciousness. So when this capital event occurred and the overmind came rushing into Sri Aurobindo, she saw what happened and approached him and said, "I have seen this occur and Krishna has entered into you." He says, "I know. And now the time has come. The hour is auspicious. Now you will step to the front and I will step behind. And you will take charge of the life of the ashram." He didn't call it ashram, but this community that was in formation. When the 24th of November comes, we'll talk more about it in detail. But what's important for us now is to recognize that that ushered her into visible broad daylight in a way that could never be undone. So the question arose in the minds of a few who did not have already an intimate contact with her. Who is the mother? Who is this European lady who has come and taken charge of our lives? Why? So Sri Aurobindo wrote this first chapter, in a sense, as a bold declaration of what it means to aspire for this truth and what is necessary for it. Not so much to offer information straight away about her, but have us look into ourselves and see what we are at core and what it is that we want to contact above that can change substantially the living experience on this earth. What will change the way we think, the way we feel, the way we live, the way we work together? So this first essay was written with that in mind. There are two powers that alone can affect in their conjunction the great and difficult thing which is the aim of our endeavor. A fixed and unfailing aspiration that calls from below, and a supreme grace from above that answers. But the supreme grace will act only in the conditions of the light and the truth. It will not act in conditions laid upon it by the falsehood and the ignorance. For if it were to yield to the demands of the falsehood, it would defeat its own purpose. These are the conditions of the light and truth, the sole conditions under which the highest force will descend. And it is only the very highest supramental force descending from above and opening from below that can victoriously handle the physical nature and annihilate its difficulties. There must be a total and sincere surrender. There must be an exclusive self-opening to the divine power. There must be a constant and integral choice of the truth that is descending, a constant and integral rejection of the falsehood of the mental, vital, and physical powers and appearances that still rule the earth nature. The surrender must be total and seize all the parts of the being. It is not enough that the psychic should respond and the higher mental accept, or even the inner vital submit and the inner physical consciousness feel the influence. There must be, in no part of the being, even the most external, anything that makes a reserve, anything that hides behind doubts, confusions, and subterfuges, anything that revolts or refuses. If part of the being surrenders, but another part reserves itself, follows its own way, or makes its own conditions, then each time that that happens, you are yourself pushing the divine grace away from you. If behind your devotion and surrender, you make a cover for your desires, egoistic demands, and vital insistences, if you put these things in place of the true aspiration, or mix them with it, or try to impose them on the divine Shakti, then it is idle to invoke the divine grace to transform you. If you open yourself on one side, or in one part to the truth, and on another side are constantly opening the gates to hostile forces, it is vain to expect that the divine grace will abide with you. You must keep the temple clean if you wish to install there the living presence. If each time the power intervenes and brings in the truth, you turn your back on it and call in again the falsehood that has been expelled, it is not the divine grace that you must blame for failing you, but the falsity of your own will and the imperfection of your own surrender. If you call for the truth, and yet something in you chooses what is false, ignorant, and undivine, or even simply is unwilling to reject it altogether, then always you will be open to attack, and the grace will recede from you. Detect first what is false or obscure in you, and persistently reject it. Then alone can you rightly call for the divine power to transform you. Do not imagine that truth and falsehood, light and darkness, surrender and selfishness, can be allowed to dwell together in the house consecrated to the divine. The transformation must be integral, and integral, therefore, the rejection of all that withstands it. Reject the false notion that the divine power will do and is bound to do everything for you at your demand, and even though you do not satisfy the conditions laid down by the Supreme. Make your surrender true and complete. Then only will all else be done for you. Reject, too, the false and indolent expectation that the divine power will do even the surrender for you. The Supreme demands your surrender to her, but does not impose it. You are free at every moment till the irrevocable transformation comes to deny and to reject the divine or to recall your self-giving if you are willing to suffer the spiritual consequence. Your surrender must be self-made and free. It must be the surrender of a living being, not of an inert automaton or mechanical tool. An inert passivity is constantly confused with the real surrender, but out of an inert passivity, nothing true and powerful can come. It is the inert passivity of physical nature that leaves it at the mercy of every obscure or undivine influence. A glad and strong and helpful submission is demanded to the working of the divine force. The obedience of the illumined disciple of the truth, of the inner warrior who fights against obscurity and falsehood, of the faithful servant of the divine. This is the true attitude, and only those who can take and keep it preserve a faith unshaken by disappointments and difficulties, and shall pass through the ordeal to the supreme victory and the great transmutation. Since we're divided in the composition of our study, we have some people in the room with us here in Pensacola, and we have some people in the room with us on Zoom elsewhere. It's not easy to have a conversation back and forth because one question won't be heard, another answer won't be heard. So I invite you, if you have questions, to send them to me by email, and we'll try to take them up as we go successively along. My thought is that the reading of the book, The Mother, is short and brief, but I think an in-depth study might be worthwhile, and I would expect that this is going to take actually a few months. So, who knows, we may still be working in the book, The Mother, when the new year comes. Good news? Bad news? You tell me. With your permission, I'll continue to try to find passages from Savitri which relate. Of course, there's Book 3, the Book of the Divine Mother. But we might wear it out, so I may wander from passage to passage, from time to time, looking for that illumined disciple of truth, in the being of Ashwapati, or he who carries truth, Satyavan, to illuminate passages that we read, won't always come from the Book of the Divine Mother. Now, this is going to be the shortest evening that you have with us. Here's a passage from Savitri. And this is Book 3, the Book of the Divine Mother, Canto 2, the Adoration of the Divine Mother. Even while he stood on being's naked edge, and all the passion and seeking of his soul faced their extinction in some featureless vast, the presence he yearned for suddenly drew close. Across the silence of the ultimate calm, out of a marvelous transcendence core, a body of wonder and translucency, as if a sweet mystic summary of herself, escaping into the original bliss, had come enlarged out of eternity, someone came, infinite and absolute. A being of wisdom, power, and delight, even as a mother draws her child to her arms, took to her breast nature and world and soul, abolishing the signless emptiness, breaking the vacancy and voiceless hush, piercing the limitless unknowable, into the liberty of the motionless depths, a beautiful and felicitous luster stole. The power, the light, the bliss no word can speak, imaged itself in a surprising beam and built a golden passage to his heart, touching through him all longing sentient things. A moment's sweetness of the all-beautiful canceled the vanity of the cosmic whirl. A nature throbbing with a heart divine was felt in the unconscious universe. It made the breath a happy mystery. A love that bore the cross of pain with joy. You demonized the sorrow of the world, made happy the weight of long unending time, the secret caught of God's felicity. Affirming in life a hidden ecstasy, it held the spirit to its miraculous course. Carrying immortal values to the hours, it justified the labor of the suns. For one was there, supreme, behind the God. A mother might brooded upon the world. A consciousness revealed its marvelous front, transcending all that is, denying none. Imperishable above our fallen heads, he felt a rapturous and unstumbling force. The undying truth appeared, the enduring power of all that here is made and then destroyed, the mother of all godheads and all strengths, who, mediatrix, binds earth to the supreme. The enigma seized that rules our nature's night, the covering nescience was unmasked and slain. Its mind of error was stripped off from things, and the dull moods of its perverting will. Illumined by her all-seeing identity, knowledge and ignorance could strive no more. No longer could the Titan opposites, antagonist poles of the world's artifice, impose the illusion of their twofold screen, throwing their figures between us and her. A wisdom was near, disguised by its own works, of which the darkened universe is the robe. No more existence seemed an aimless fall. Extinction was no more the sole release. The hidden word was found, the long-sought clue. Revealed was the meaning of our spirit's birth, condemned to an imperfect body and mind, in the inconscience of material things, and the indignity of mortal life. A heart was felt in the spaces wide and bare, a burning love from white spiritual founts, annulled the sorrow of the ignorant depths. Suffering was lost in her immortal smile. A life from beyond grew conqueror here of death. To err no more was natural to mind. Wrong could not come where all was light and love. The formless and the formed were joined in her. Immensity was exceeded by a look. A face revealed the crowded infinite. Incarnating inexpressibly in her limbs the boundless joy the blind world forces seek, her body of beauty mooned the seas of bliss. At the head she stands, of birth and toil and fate. In their slow round, the cycles turn to her call. Alone, her hands can change time's dragon base. Hers is the mystery the night conceals. The spirit's alchemist energy is hers. She is the golden bridge, the wonderful fire. The luminous heart of the unknown is she, a power of silence in the depths of God. She is the force, the inevitable word, the magnet of our difficult ascent, the sun from which we kindle all our suns, the light that leans from the unrealized vasts, the joy that beckons from the impossible, the might of all that never yet came down. All nature dumbly calls to her alone to heal with her feet the aching throb of life and break the seals on the dim soul of man and kindle her fire in the closed heart of things. All here shall be one day her sweetness' home. All contraries prepare her harmony. Towards her our knowledge climbs, our passion gropes. In her miraculous rapture we shall dwell. Her clasp shall turn to ecstasy our pain. Our self shall be one self with all through her. In her confirmed, because transformed in her, our life shall find in its fulfilled response above the boundless hushed beatitudes, below the wonder of the embrace divine. This known as in a thunder flash of God, the rapture of things eternal filled his limbs. Amazement fell upon his ravished sense. His spirit was caught in her intolerant flame. Once seen, his heart acknowledged only her. Only a hunger of infinite bliss was left. All aims in her were lost, then found in her. His base was gathered to one pointing spire. Mantra. Namaste. Jai Ma.